It's HSK Today.
SA made by Patera with the right pad.
A weekly in-depth look at the Henderson Silver Knights.
Morelli left wing. Richard scores.
And the AHL.
2 seconds and one. The Silver Knights hang on.
With your hosts, Brian McCormick and Justin Russo.
Sloan Center, and happy Valentine's Day to all of you. This is HSK Today. Brian McCormick and Justin Russo here. You there, Joe Costa on the other side of the glass. As we talk horse hockey and get ready for the Silver Knights weekend road trip back to California, they'll head to San Diego for Saturday and Coachella Valley again for Sunday as the playoff race and bubble continues to take shape. There's still plenty of runway left to this regular season, but at the same time, Justin, sometimes, for argument's sake, a six-point gap, you say, well, that's three games. Sometimes that takes a couple of weeks to close, which is to say that for the Silver Knights right now, eighth in the Pacific, on the outside of the playoff picture, looking in right there in the thick of it with Ontario, Bakersfield, Abbotsford, but they've got to get going. They got a split last weekend in Ontario and Coachella, which is useful, but you got to start stringing some wins together. That's important against San Diego.
Yeah, and in hindsight, given the loss on Saturday to Coachella Valley, how important was that comeback that they had on Friday against Ontario where they end up winning in the shootout? And a really nice move by Jacob Rabinitz, who just let him play the Ontario Reign every game. It seems like he has so much success. Three out of his four regular season goals against Ontario and the shootout winner there. But, a good return from the All-Star break for the HSK on that Friday game. And then I think you saw they ran into just a really tough Coachella Valley team that is really starting to look like the team that we saw last season. We talked to Grant Fuhrer earlier, a few weeks ago about their struggles early on in the season and now how they're starting to pick up the pace. And I think they're really cementing themselves as the front runner in this division right now. And Silver Knights ran into them at a bad time, and we'll see if they can bounce back this week. And they're going to see them again this weekend as well. So we'll see if they can repay the favor.
So we'll talk HSK here and now, as we always do. We'll have some Valentine's Day fun. We'll have some Super Bowl-related fun. We're going to have fun. I think it's a good day for fun, especially because, again, for all the listeners of our show, it is Valentine's Day. Maybe tonight there's a candlelit dinner planned. Walk along the beach if you're out of town. You might need some sort of background audio, a delightful mood setter. We're happy to be there for you. For the Silver Knights, let's go back to Friday and the win in Ontario. And you're absolutely right, Justin. In retrospect, every win is important. That one felt important, even more so now when, again, you look how the math starts to shake up. And just to give a picture of what we're talking, so the top seven teams in the Pacific will get into the playoffs. Silver Knights right now are in eighth. They are 1 point back of Ontario. Ontario has three games in hand. They are 2 points back of Bakersfield. Bakersfield has seven games in hand. They are 3 points back of Abbotsford. Abbotsford has four games in hand. Everyone has games in hand to one degree or another. So, again, time to start winning your games so that when that math catches up to you, you have a little bit more control of your own situation. But in Ontario, they were losing 3-1. This was right out of the break. A little bit slow to get the offense going. And then, really, it was a gift, because hard work and forecheck pressure makes it happen. But Eric Portillo, who moves the puck so well and so aggressively, makes a no-look backhand pass, puts it right on the inexplicable, really, right on the tape of Jakub Demick. It was a great effort by Portillo to dive back in front to make the initial save, but Daniel D'Amato cleans it up. That mistake by Portillo changes that entire game on its head, and really, with just enough time for the Silver Knights to take advantage of it, for there to be enough game left for them to take over.
And it almost felt like the hockey gods repaying the Silver Knights, because if you recall the reason that Ontario had jump-started themselves, it was because of a mistake by Isaiah Seville on the side of his net, misplaying a puck and giving the Ontario Reign that first goal.
Really active boards in Ontario.
Yeah, so came back in favor of the Silver Knights in that one, and Portillo, as you mentioned, he made the really nice save on Demick, but D'Amato was right there with him and able to get that one. And then that sprung the Silver Knights for another goal just 26 seconds later from Sheldon Rempel, and boom, they were right back in the game. So a gift, but the Silver Knights took advantage of it, and they kept building off of that first goal to get that second one and tie the game.
Talking some individuals, we'll bounce back and forth. The two driving factors behind that comeback in that 26-second span. First of all, Daniel D'Amato, who has had such a great month, and now four goals in his last five games after the Silver Knights were shut out on Saturday in Coachella. But he's been one of those players that has been given an elevated opportunity with some of the moving and shaking of the rosters, both in Henderson and for Vegas. but also a player that, you know, I just keep thinking about what Tim Speltz said about Daniel D'Amato two summers ago when they signed him for the first time and mentioned this was a player that because of COVID and what that did to the OHL season and because Daniel D'Amato in his youth in midget hockey had a broken leg, he's lost 2 years of development before getting to this point. And they knew they had a useful player, a hard-working player, but for the skill set and the productivity, they said, and again, not predicting when it would be, but this is going back two seasons ago, is there a bit of a delayed fuse? Is the best of Daniel D'Amato still to come? And we've seen a much more impactful player below the dots over these last two road trips, that something's starting to blossom a bit.
Yeah, and you know, of course, as you mentioned, taking a little bit while to blossom, at least on the offensive side of things, but he's been trusted by Ryan Craig to be in the lineup consistently this season, and talk about the depth scoring that the Silver Knights have needed as of late, and he's been one of the guys that's been really driving it with not only goals overall, but goals in critical situations, like the one we saw on Friday, where it jumpstarts this team offensively, it gets them going, and you can point to a few guys in that bottom six that either have had elevated roles or who have come up from Savannah, who have really taken it by the reins. I think Jet Jones is another guy that fits that bill, especially on the defensive side of things, where they've just taken the most of their opportunities and really thrive for this overnights.
Yeah, and for Daniel D'Amato, again, you don't get those opportunities by process of elimination. Like, why are you looking around? Well, who's here? Who's left when players are called up? Certainly, there's some math to it, but it's also, okay, well, who's shown me something in the instances where he has been given a little bit more ownership? And for Daniel D'Amato, even before this offensive eruption started, frankly, it's what kick-started it to me, is his work shorthanded. And the not only shorthanded goal in Tucson a couple of weeks ago, but he's been consistently generating pressure off of shorthanded situations, and that has given them reason to see what he can do in other areas of the game, and it's paying off.
Yeah, and shorthanded has been so key for him because, like you said, it's about generating pressure off of those situations as well, where you know, it's one thing to contain the other power play, but I feel like a lot of what we saw and continue to see with Gage Quinney, Sheldon Rempel, they like to be aggressive on the penalty kill when they get out there. So it's not just about, okay, let's keep the puck out of the back of our net. It's, okay, well, if I get the puck here at the top of the zone and I have a one-on-one perhaps, I'm going to go. I'm going to see what I can create out of it. And Daniel D'Amato has not been shy about that. He's gotten his opportunities. And the shorthanded goal he had in Tucson, he kept driving to the net after making a pass to the wall and got a great opportunity right in front.
That's certainly a positive, and we're going to see some more material probably in the next few days on HendersonSilverKnights.com. Kiki Downey, the digital content coordinator for the Silver Knights, sat down with Daniel D'Amato, so we'll see some written word on him as well. Other end of the spectrum, from pleasantly surprising surge of offense to relentless, overwhelming deluge of offense is Sheldon Rempel, who had the tying goal in that game. He's in the top rankings in the AHL in shots on goal. Just a constant flurry towards the net from Sheldon Rempel, and right now pretty much everything is going in.
And it's even more impressive because you say everything's going in that he had the four-goal game against the Firebirds, gets called up to the VGK, scores a couple of NHL goals. What's the big deal on that? His first NHL goal, scores a couple against the Islanders and the Rangers, and then comes back like he never left. And he is still providing for this Silver Knights team. I think it was 8 goals in his last 5 games heading into the last one against Coachella Valley before they got shut out. And just consistently the guy that you look to if you need some kind of offense, if you need an important goal for this team. He has been there at every step of the way and continues to impress. And a big reason why, as well, he was the first guy on the list to get called up for the VGK game on Monday.
It is 8 goals and 10 points in the last 6 games for Sheldon Rempel. And during that span, also 23 shots on goal. So it is an all-out frontal assault from Sheldon Rempel and paying dividends for the HSK. You move past the comeback win on Friday in Ontario. Again, significant. Even though Ontario gets a point, it's progress made for an Ontario team that's just having a terrible time of it of late. They've lost, or they are winless, I should say, in 5 in a row. They have 2 wins in their last 10. If you're the Silver Knights, not only are you trying to win for winning's sake, you're not aiming for 7th, you're aiming for higher, but you're trying to get yourself right. Silver Knights, for that matter, are 500 over their last 10. You're trying to get yourself right, but you're also trying to target, okay, who's catchable? Who's trending that way? We've talked about the gap between the Silver Knights and 4th place Colorado. It's a 5-point gap, but there's lots of games in hand to factor in there as well. But if you look at the Silver Knights, who's limping? And right now it certainly is Ontario. So it was absolutely important to get points against the rain. If you look in the rearview mirror for another team having the exact same conversation, it's the team we're going to see on Saturday in San Diego. They've won 7 of 10. They have won, I think, 9 of their last 11, if I'm not mistaken, or 9 of their last 12. They've won 3 in a row. This is a team that looked like they were left for dead in December, and they are surging right now and beating some really good teams in the process.
A really impressive weekend for San Diego over Calgary, where Friday night they had that surprise 5-0 shutout win, and then they come back Saturday with that high-flying 7-4 victory. And, yeah, they're with games in hand right there with the Silver Knights at 43 points, and a team that, as you mentioned, is surging right now. So for the Silver Knights, it's as much as it has been about looking ahead, and naturally you want to do that in the eighth spot. You want to look ahead to seventh and see, you know, what you can potentially do to get into those couple of final playoff spots. This is a San Diego team that I know last year they had their struggles, and even early this year they had their struggles, but a team that you don't really want to play right now given how well they're playing, and the Silver Knights better be ready on Saturday night when they go to Pechanga Arena.
8 points in the last game, 3 games for Chase DeLeo. It is a team that has gotten really good goaltending since they've given a little bit more of the reins to Thomas Sechanik. It's a team that's playing really well, and again, it's a building that even when the Gulls have struggled, most teams have a hard time going into Pechanga Arena. The Silver Knights historically certainly have as well. Also, of course, a name to highlight on the back end among the youthful prospects for the San Diego Gulls is Olin Zellweger, and he has now 9 points in his last 6 games. So certainly some firepower for San Diego. They're feeling well about themselves, and just as important for the Silver Knights as they continue their climb to kind of stomp down on San Diego coming up behind them.
Yeah, and you know, you look at even last year for the San Diego Gulls team when they had Lukasz Dostal, and he was the guy that he was kind of left out to dry last year, and he did as much as he could, but they just didn't have the talent up front to protect their net and to score offensively to help him. And I think that
he's still experiencing that this year
a little bit, yeah. But they've gotten some infusion of guys now, as you mentioned, Zellweger and some of the guys that have come up. He's gotten a little help this year with some of the players there, and they're starting to surge or starting to build something as players come up in that organization as well. So, yeah, a really dangerous team there. And, you know, for the Silver Knights, especially looking at the teams ahead of them as well, of course they're going to play each other a little bit, take some points away from each other, but you just have to make sure you take care of what you can take care of. And for the Silver Knights, another important weekend, another, you know, kind of set of 6 periods, as Ryan Craig has decided to divide it into among these weekends in February, that they need to take care of, and we'll see if they can do it starting on Saturday.
Silver Knights fell 4-0 on Saturday in Palm Desert against the Firebirds. As you mentioned, it's a Firebird team, the defending Western Conference champions, looking a lot like it now.
Yep.
Really hitting their stride over the last month or so. They are unbeaten in regulation in their last 9, so that's going to be another challenge this coming Sunday. But for the Silver Knights, a little flat on Saturday, just never really got to their game, got the offense going. They were trailing early, and you know how hard it is to chase hockey games. They were trailing 2-0 by the latter stages of the first period. Along with that box score, Silver Knights' power play was 0-for-2. When the Silver Knights generate power plays, and frankly, their power play numbers have been outstanding. That's the subject we're going to get to here. The power play has been insanely good, and so much so that it was first overall during the weekend, and just checking the status report now, still first overall, about half a percentage point above Hartford. The power play has been extremely reliable. Now it is 10 for its last 21. So it absolutely has bolstered a Silver Knights team that has had 5-on-5 struggles this year. But another thing that we heard from head coach Ryan Craig over the weekend was, well, we can't just rely on our power play. It's very good, but there's going to be nights when it doesn't score, or there's going to be nights where we don't get as many power plays as we need to have it dictate control of the game. And even during this stretch where the Silver Knights have had terrific power play numbers, they have not been, I said they're 10 for 21 over their last 7 games. That's 21 power plays over 7 games. That's not an inordinate number of man advantages. It's not a team that's necessarily drawing a ton for as much of an advantage as that is.
And we remember earlier in the year, earlier in January, we were talking about over a 5-6 game stretch, they had about 5-6 a game that they were generating.
Yeah.
So at that time, it was an embarrassment of riches in terms of opportunities on the power play. But as you mentioned, it's not coming as frequently now. And Ryan Craig has also mentioned the fact that in order to get yourself power play opportunities, you have to put yourselves in spots to get them those opportunities. You have to play in the offensive zone. You have to win your battles on the board. You have to force the other team to take some penalties. And, of course, there's going to be some variance with certain referees on each night, how tightly they call the games. But the Silver Knights need to get that 5-on-5 game going so that the power play can supplement their 5-on-5 game rather than be the entirety of their scoring.
Silver Knights are 10-for-21 on the power play over their last 7 games. They are 14-for-33 over their last 11 games. Again, this isn't just good. This is video game good.
Really,
it's just
good.
A matter of, and at this time of year, too, now, again, we still have a third of the season left. It's not like it's playoff hockey and the refs are going to put the whistles in their pockets, mm-hmm. but they also understand the math of these games. You do get to this time of year where they start to make you earn it just a little bit more. So if there's power plays or if there's penalties, they're going to call them. But you also prepare yourself for the fact that some of the ticky-tack stuff might go away.
Yeah, and I think the Silver Knights, and that's why Ryan Craig mentioned that over the weekend, is in terms of getting their 5-on-5 game right. And, you know, you mentioned that final third of the season. It was interesting. Bruce Cassidy recently talked about how he views the seasons in thirds. And he says part one is developing your game and finding your game and, you know, how you want to play. Part two of the season is, okay, now we have to fix some of the things that aren't going well right now. We have to mend our game a little bit. And then part three is, okay, now it's time to get ready for the playoff push, and we have to get everything together here to make that push. So for the Silver Knights, as you mentioned, it's that final third of the season. Have to start mending all of the things that have, you know, hurt them over the last little bit and try to prepare themselves for this final stretch run.
So we talked about Sheldon Rempel and his recent success. Grigori Denisenko has 9 points in his last 10 games, had a nice showing at All-Star Weekend in San Jose as well. At the same time, though, you look at some of the personnel missing at the moment. Brendan Brisson is up with the VGK. Adam Cracknell is injured and will be for a little bit. Jake Bischoff has been out, will be for a little bit. The fact that this power play is still clicking the way it is without some of that personnel, a real credit to Ryan Craig and to Brent Kissio.
Oh, 100%. And it's been a big rotation of guys, whether it's call-ups or injuries. And, you know, even at the beginning of the season, we saw Jake Bischoff and Christopher Sedoff, two guys who are out right now, quarterback a lot of the power play time for the Silver Knights. So it's been a transition on the back end there. Lucas Cormier, of course, stepped back into that normal role that he had last season as well and has continued to thrive there. But for the Silver Knights, we talk about the back end as one of the things that, I guess, you know, leading up to these injuries, had been so steady for the HSK. But now it seems like that power play unit, no matter who you put on it, it just seems to thrive. And the Silver Knights have their mentality of how they want to play on the power play, and they have it down pat.
And someone who might help with that, Caden Korzak, who joined the Silver Knights last weekend, and we expect to see this coming weekend against two teams, San Diego and Coachella, which are in that mushy middle in the American Hockey League rankings on the penalty kill, might be a factor. We'll talk a little bit about Caden Korzak when we come back. We'll also have a little bit of playoff nostalgic fun, Justin, Joe, and I. That's straight ahead on HSK Today. You're listening to the Henderson Silver Knights Radio Network.
Guess what? I got a fever. And the only prescription is more
HSK Today.
Silver Knights fans, if you're Silver Knights fans, you're also probably Nighthawks fans if you're ready to experience the excitement of Nighthawks football this season, but find yourself unable to attend every thrilling game. We have just the solution for you. It's the Playbook Flex Plan. With the Playbook Flex Plan, you have the freedom to tailor your game day experience according to your schedule and your preferences, all while enjoying discounted rates. Best of all, tickets are just $18 per game. Don't miss out on this opportunity to join us for an unforgettable season of arena football in the vibrant atmosphere of Las Vegas. Get your flex plan today. Contact the Nighthawks ticketing team at 702-645-4259, 702-645-4259 for Nighthawks football. Well, as we continue this Valentine's Day afternoon on HSK Today, do want to acknowledge this because it is a developing story in Kansas City. Obviously, I'm sure many of you are privy to the events by now during the Kansas City Chiefs Super Bowl celebration, parade, and rally. There was an active shooter situation from the reports that we've seen. It looks like the criminals have been apprehended. And just to take a moment to, of course, send our prayers to all those impacted at the rally today. As we know full well from last summer, a championship parade should be nothing but a joyous celebratory occasion. But as we also know from earlier this year at UNLV, evil does exist and must be combated. And for that, we thank the first responders who took hold of the situation, but also from some of the reports and videos that have been coming out, it looks like some of the first responders to that situation were the fans themselves, and they are brave heroes for limiting this to what it unfortunately, tragically did end up being. But just to take a moment and just acknowledge it, because it is important that everyone in Kansas City here forth be safe, and prayers to those who are certainly going to have a very difficult time over the next few days dealing with the aftermath of that. But prayers sent. As we get back to hockey and the here and now and the Henderson Silver Knights, our last segment, we started down the path a little bit, Justin, but for the Silver Knights, who have had so much talent drawn to the VGK, and for necessary need, but also for the VGK having success with those HSK parts. Looks like Shea Theodore was at practice in a regular contact jersey today, so they continue to get healthier. But one of the players, some of the talent flowing Henderson's way, is Caden Korzak. And certainly a huge part of Caden Korzak's current status with the Silver Knights is math. He's been terrific in Vegas. He's put up very good numbers. Yeah. I think he's established himself as an NHLer who's going to be playing some AHL hockey. So good for him and good for the organization for what he's shown. But right now for the Silver Knights, very, very good, because that's a massive piece for them on the back end.
Oh, very much welcome. And this move was not anything that Caden Korzak did on the ice with the VGK. He's been excellent with them. And as you said, it's a bit of math where he can come down, not on waivers. He can come down and be free to come to the Silver Knights without any outside risk, essentially. And
which Daniil Miromanov couldn't.
And exactly.
Others.
So, you know, Bruce Cassidy has talked a lot about, look, there's a lot of guys, especially with not only Shea Theodore, who he said they expect back probably next week rather than this weekend, but Ben Hutton, too, who's getting healthy as well. So yeah. there's a logjam on that back end there, and you saw Daniil Miromanov get a couple of games to essentially see what he has and show what he has to Bruce Cassidy. But, hey, in the meantime, Caden Korzak coming out of this Silver Knights team at a great time for the HSK. You're never going to turn down a guy like that, a guy who was so solid for the Silver Knights last year and who has since grown into a great NHL player. Skating with Braden McNabb, that's very tough to do for a guy like Braden, where you're not in any way limiting his ability because he's such a good stay-at-home defenseman and shutdown guy. So he's been excellent, and very much welcome to have him back here in Henderson to help out that back end for games this weekend in San Diego and Coachella Valley.
As you mentioned, Justin, one of the biggest reasons why he's the one coming down, of course, there's his age. He can still benefit from playing. You know, he could play as much as 30 minutes a night with the Silver Knights.
Yeah.
That's what they want to do. but also the fact that he was waivers exempt, and as was demonstrated, not surprisingly, you knew the risks because of just the way that roster math is and where teams are in their team building process. But Braden Pahal, they tried to get him through waivers, knowing it was going to be difficult to do, and Calgary ended up claiming him. So that waiver exemption status is extremely important, just to know that he'd be able to go through where others may not.
Yeah, and again, there's going to be a lot of decisions that have to be made in terms of playing time and where guys end up fitting here, but, you know, an opportunity for Caden Korzak to at the very least come back down here and play, because, you know, of course he's been at the NHL level and he's done such a great job there, but at the end of the day, it's better to have him down here at least playing and getting some of those reps than to perhaps sit on the sidelines while other guys either, you know, show what they can have and Daniil Miromanov, or when guys come back like Shea Theodore and Ben Hutton.
Let's have a little fun, because, you know, Vegas had the Super Bowl this past weekend. By all accounts, everyone had a great experience. Roger Goodell sounds like he's coming back. So, you know, bravo to Vegas for
A+.
A tremendous showing in the Super Bowl. I was interested while I was watching the game. And before I get down the road too far, let me just give the disclaimer. This is a very personal, very subjective take on this. But I thought the Super Bowl, the game itself, I think enough people would agree with this too, for the first few quarters, wasn't anything special or scintillating. Certainly it picked up, and certainly Patrick Mahomes did Patrick Mahomes things. But I came away from it thinking, you know what, I don't know if I'm going to remember this Super Bowl all that well a few years from now for the game itself. Again, that's very, very subjective. But for a game that ended on a touchdown in overtime, I didn't find it to be that resounding of an I'll remember where I was when this happened at Super Bowl. I could see myself in a few years being told, you remember when the Chiefs beat the Niners in the Super Bowl? And I'll say to myself, like, that's right. How did that one end? Personal. But I don't think I'm alone. And the reason I say that is that, of course, there are plenty of NFL moments that are I remember where I was, the catch, Santonio Holmes, there's plenty of them. but David Tyree's helmet catch might be the best example. But hockey feels like it has a lot.
Yeah.
And it had me just go through in my mind and start picking some of them out. What, how many are there that I remember exactly where I was? And for the sake of the exercise, these weren't moments for my team where, you know, I can probably tell you a goal that was scored in February of 2009, but I remember what I was doing because it was really cool. No, these are things that I'm detached from that I think most people would agree on a lot of them, but that have that kind of, I remember exactly what I was doing.
Yeah.
So we picked out a few. Again, every sport has them. But I just found myself thinking, like, gosh, there's a, for a hockey fan, you can lean on a lot in the hockey archives.
And I will say real quick, to your point about the
Please.
Super Bowl, you know how you say it wasn't a moment that you'll remember. And I feel like the difference between hockey and football there is that most people, when Patrick Mahomes got that ball in overtime, felt, okay, well, I know how this one's going to end.
Uh-huh.
49ers took the ball first, got the field goal. Okay, this one's – and similar to the Patriots and Falcons in overtime. When the Patriots had that comeback in that Super Bowl and Tom Brady got the ball, it was, okay, well, this game's over. Tom Brady just got the ball. Whereas in hockey, things are so spur of the moment sometimes, whether it's in overtime where it's literally sudden death, or it can be a quick turnover leading to a goal or a massive save that comes out of nowhere. I feel like things are just so much faster in hockey rather than so predictable when
for sure.
A team gets the ball and drives out.
And again, for Buffalo Bills fans, like it or not, wide right. For Seahawks fans, there's the interception at the goal line. I am not saying football doesn't have them. Every sport has them if you're looking for them. I just found myself going like, I don't know if this one will stand out in my memory. And it just sent me down the path of, boy, do I have a lot of random hockey memories that have no attachment to me whatsoever, but were big moment games like that. So one of them, and the first one that comes to mind, it's always the first one that comes to mind. I don't, because it's like they say the best player in the world is whoever your favorite player was when you were 12 years old. Similarly, I feel like there are big moments when you were allowed to stay up late enough to watch them that maybe resonate more than others. But I still remember the Steve Yzerman overtime goal to beat St. Louis in Game 7, and I think it's because it sounded like this.
Gretzky had it, lost it. Yzerman picks it up. Yzerman moving. Blue line chance. Score!
It's also possible I just really, really selfishly miss Gary Thorne. That was one of his best.
Gary Thorne. Oh, my God. Well, just the shot itself, too. I mean, the fact that he even took that shot from that far is one thing. But for it to go in off the pipe, you hear the little iron ring there, it's just so great.
Bar down, nonetheless.
A stride over the blue line. And the way that Joe Louis Arena, where that camera nest sat, somewhere some guy has the bragging rights of, like, that guy who jumped up in front of the camera and turned his face around, I'm that guy. It's your tax accountant or something. But that one always, always resonates. I remember watching that on SportsCenter all night.
Yeah.
And I was 7 years old. But that one's one of my favorite. Your turn.
Well, one of the ones from my youth would be going to the 2009 Stanley Cup Final. And this was the second of two matchups between the Detroit Red Wings and the Pittsburgh Penguins, two teams that were absolutely loaded for back-to-back years. Joe Louis Arena again, coming back down to Game 7, and it is a 2-1 lead for the Penguins. And in the dying moments, Marc-Andre Fleury makes this save.
Off the tire, it comes back to the point.
Just an unbelievable finish, the great Doc Emmerich. And, you know, I think, of course, Golden Knight fans know Marc-Andre Fleury fine.
Yes.
And know that even the technically unsound saves are just him finding a way. That was a save he made with a head-first dive with his hands essentially at his side. I don't know how he went about it, but it worked.
That was the embodiment of, I need you to give it your all right here, and just throwing your body on the line on a Nick Lidstrom shot and just doing whatever you could to keep the puck out of the back of the net. And as you mentioned with Gary Thorne, another there by Doc Emmerich, two guys that will be heavily featured in this, I'm very sure.
Well, and let's also say that we've had a little bit of recency bias in here, a little bit, because also, you know, I can tell you how amazing the Bobby Orr flying through the air goal was, too, but I didn't watch it live. So a little bit of recency bias in this. Joe, you have one.
I do. Take you back. Probably, is it the earliest goal we have? Yes.
Which one is it?
It's probably the earliest goal we have here in the highlights. Also to note about the Penguins goal, that's Nicholas Lidstrom that he stopped.
Yeah.
Arguably, probably the greatest defender of the mid-90s to the 2000s.
And what would Nicholas Lidstrom have done in that sequence with an extra second or two? Oh. He had to get rid of it.
Yeah.
If you almost want to say if he waited for Fleury to make the move, you know, the quote goes, make him make the first move, Conway. You know, if he waited for Fleury to, like, hesitate a little bit, he might have been it. But it could have gone the other way. If he had, you know, just got it off quick, he could have scored, but.
And with our football theme, the ultimate Monday morning quarterbacking is that.
Yes.
Yeah, but what do you got, Joe?
Well, this goes back to the – I think Brian probably knows where I'm going with this. Justin probably knows where I'm going with this. Even though I was currently only 5 years old when this goal was scored, we're going back to May – what was this? I should know the date of this.
Yes, you should.
Casual fan, Joe. Casual fan.
Yeah, but late May 1994, the great Howie Roseman – great Howie Rose –
Batista off for the Devils, plays it cross ice into the far corner. Matteau swoops in to intercept. Matteau behind the net, swings it in front. He scores! Matteau! Defend Matteau! And the Rangers have one more hill to climb, baby! But it's Moose Vancouver! The Rangers are headed to the final!
Stefan Matteau in double overtime. And mind you, that was only... And I've watched the Rangers documentary, and also fitting, I play that goal on the 30th anniversary of the 1994 Stanley Cup. And obviously on the 20th, back in 10 years ago, the Rangers also, Justin has another goal from 10 years ago. So we're just going all over the place today. We have Stefan Matteau in overtime to beat the New Jersey Devils in probably, I would say, one of the best playoff series of all time.
I don't think you'd be alone in that ranking, but I'll tell you what, like you said, the great Howie Rose, who is a New York broadcast legend, but also that is a great example, one of the very few highlights that was broadcast nationally in multiple countries. It was broadcast locally. One of the very few where the radio call tops every TV call in existence.
That call, every time I hear it, it just... If you could have a camera on him, it just felt like such relief and excitement of finally, here we go. Like, just all the emotions pouring out of him at that moment. So great.
Just to break up the momentum a little bit, just to prove the point that we're trying to make, not everything's a Game 7 winner. Not everything's a buzzer beater. Not everything's an overtime goal. Some of them happen in, well, we're talking playoffs, but more ordinary times of playoffs. I think we all remember where we were when Paul Kariya did this.
End of the zone, Sikora kicked it out, got it back, near side, Kariya. Kariya, the fans want one. Score! Off the floor! On the board! Paul Kariya!
I got to tell you, not to gush, I don't want to be broadcast nerdy or to be over my skis here, but Gary Thorne in his prime really was. It's like seeing Celine Dion in concert. Like, man, he hits every note, and I don't know how he does it. But that was, again, the context of that goal, the fact that we remember it so vividly all this time later, not just because of the fact that he scored, but the fact that he was unconscious 10 minutes earlier.
Oh, yeah.
And there's that classic camera shot of Scott Stevens looking at Paul Kariya with, like, that ghost look of, what are you doing up? Just an unbelievable sequence.
And you talk about the call itself, of course, the off the floor, on the board. But I love right before that where the fans want one. He's almost, yep. come on, Paul, give us one here.
Just and he answers the call. Recognizing the moment,
and
absolutely.
And he answers the call. Just such a great call there by Gary Thorne. For my next one, going to one that Joe alluded to just a little bit ago, this one coming from 10 years ago in the Stanley Cup Final with a current member of the VGK, a former Los Angeles King, doing this.
Meanwhile, it's played along to him. Centering pass flagged down by Green. Played into traffic, though. Starting back up with it now is Martinez in a 3-on-2. Clifford gave it across. It's held in a shot. Save. Rebound. Score! The Stanley Cup! Martinez!
That was... Of course, the second of three Stanley Cups now for Alec Martinez. Not a big fan of that one, Joe and Brian, I'm sure there, but a fun one.
You play the game, the where were you when. I remember I was hunched in the back. I was working for a wedding caterer, so I'm in my tuxedo. I've got my tray on the thing where we're all hunched in the back kitchen. We're all sitting, completely neglecting cake service. So
understand.
Not the best wedding performance by us, but you got to see those things, so we did. Joe, let's get one more from you. We're a little short on time for this segment. We get in a couple more. What do you got, Joe?
Well, let's go back to June 14th, 1994. and I know this date just for a many reasons, but it's when it all came to a close for many generations of Rangers fans.
The waiting is over! The New York Rangers are the Stanley Cup champions! And this one will last a lifetime!
Belmore versus, this is unbelievable! These people have waited a long time! Fans, players, coaches, unbelievable!
Let the celebration begin!
The great Sam Rosen and John Davidson on the call as the Rangers win their first Stanley Cup in 54 years. And I was five, like I've said earlier, I was 5 years old and I wasn't into hockey at the time. I don't know if I could still count that. I know I'm a Rangers fan, but if it counts, it counts. It's hard for me to count it, but either way, still a great moment.
Well, count it for you, Charlie. With this assignment, you went to one very specific two-month window in the mid-90s.
But he knows where he was.
You know, I thought we were short on time, but again, just to drill the point home, other ones that I thought about when we were doing this exercise, the Patrick Kane overtime goal against Philadelphia, which at the time, the NHL got a lot of guff for, and it was nobody's fault. It was an optical illusion, but for those who don't remember, it's Patrick Kane off the left wing board, slides one along the ice from a terrible angle that sneaks through Michael Layton, and then got stuck underneath the pad in the back of the net. Nobody knew the puck was in except for Patrick Kane. So Patrick Kane is losing his mind. His teammates are mirroring him, and no one else in Philadelphia knows what the heck is going on. At the time, it was like, ugh. Look, isn't this just the NHL's luck? They get an overtime cup winner to end a decades-long drought, and they don't even get to punctuate it. As time has gone on, I think that's aged incredibly well. I think it ages as something that was really cool.
It's one of the more unique moments, and you know, especially the Hawks got a couple of more after that, so they got a proper celebration under their belt there. But yeah, that was definitely one of them. Another one I thought of, I grew up as a Penguins fan, so for me, the Chris Kunitz against the Ottawa Senators in 2017, a little more recent there, that essentially has really turned the fortunes of the Ottawa Senators franchise in recent seasons, but that's one that came to mind for me.
We'll play one more. We'll play one more for the sake of this audience, because it's one that, of course, our audience would like the most. For me, this counts from last spring, because this was the moment in Game 5 when I'm in the press box and I say, the party can start right now. It's over when Riley Smith does this.
Theodore again out high. A wrist shot. Knocked down in front. Emmanuel with Carlson. Now Smith. He scores! Between his own legs to Riley Smith. Tonight's take a 4-1 lead.
And then, of course, the great Dan Duva. That was what made it 4-1. Of course, Mark Stone's hat trick would really, really cement it. But that was a moment in a game where you could feel, first of all, that was second goal in a span of a couple of minutes.
Yeah, they were really pushing in that second period there.
It was a relentless wave after wave after wave shift, and when Riley Smith finished that with the between the legs Carlson finesse to set it up, that was when you knew for Florida there's no coming back from this. And you could feel it in the building. The festivities officially started about an hour and a half later, but symbolically the party started right then and there.
And one thing about that specific call, if you go back and listen, I don't know if you caught it the first time, woo-hoo! You hear the woohoo, and I was fortunate enough to be in the booth with Dan and Gary on that night, and that was Gary Lawless just giving out a little woohoo there, and to your point, recognizing the moment that
the party started that one
was it, that's the one that's going to win us the cup there, and we're going to ride out with the Stanley Cup championship. That was an extremely memorable night.
Well, lots of fun, and again, maybe our entire audience had that moment in the Super Bowl this past weekend. I just didn't, but it just shows you great moments are always waiting just around the corner. We'll hop out. When we come back, we'll wrap things up on this Valentine's Day edition. A little Valentine's Day fun, a little hockey world news, whatever we can jam into about 5 or 6 minutes straight ahead on HSK Today.
A man become preeminent, he's expected to have enthusiasms. 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 What are mine? What draws my admiration? What is that which gives me joy?
Brian McCormick.
Well, thank you, Robert De Niro. That's quite kind. Justin Russo's here as well as we get ready for Silver Knights and San Diego Gulls this Saturday. It'll be a 6 o'clock puck drop on Saturday from Pechanga Arena and a 5 o'clock Sunday puck drop from Acrisure Arena in Palm Desert when the Silver Knights take on the Firebirds. We hope you're enjoying your Valentine's Day. We hope you have big Valentine's Day plans. Justin, do you have any big Valentine's Day plans?
This was my Valentine's Day plan. I don't know. So this is all I had. That's all I had going.
I didn't get you anything.
Oh.
It's uncomfortable.
Well, okay, Brian, you handle the last segment. I'll
yeah, on my own. I've got. I have Valentine's Day plans with the wife this evening. We're going to go get dinner. I got a 9 o'clock reservation, which shows you when I booked it. But.
But hey,
I'm excited about it.
Lucky for once in the schedule for February, no Wednesday games. So, you know, you lucked
out
there.
Very true. And, you know, I was trying to remember, and shame, the fact that I can't remember means I don't do a very good job on Valentine's Day. But I was trying to think, when's the last Valentine's Day that me and my wife actually spent together? I think I've been on the road for the last couple. And it brought the memory of a little throwback, fun Valentine's Day story, I think. 2 years ago? It was 2 years ago. The team was on the road for Valentine's Day. And for the record, this all worked out fine. But in retrospect, again, lessons you learn and things you wish you asked your wife about first. We made the plan of, well, the players are going to be in on the road. So for the players with wives and kids, oh, what a shame that they can't be with their families on Valentine's Day. You know what would be fun is if we had Lucky and Harold go to their houses with bouquets from a local florist who worked with us, helped us. And, hey, your husband can't be here on Valentine's Day, but he wanted to make sure you have a happy Valentine's Day. Isn't that sweet? Isn't that nice? Until we, after the fact, realized, again, everyone was a great sport about it, but they would have preferred that we tell them we were coming. That would have ruined the surprise, but I now think to myself, if I had my wife on a Wednesday or a Tuesday or whatever morning answer the door, she is not going to be in her video camera photographic tip-top shape, or which she would prefer. Again, all the women, you know, lovely and gorgeous, but they would have preferred a little bit of a warning. So it was just funny. The first person took the brunt of it. But that person then warned the rest of them and said, just...
Yeah. Get ready.
Roger. Someone's coming with a camera.
Oh, goodness.
So we learned that lesson going forward. But that was a fun Valentine's Day surprise. My other good one would be in February 2020, Valentine's Day, because I was in San Antonio. And a week and a half earlier, we'd found out that the San Antonio Rampage were going to be no more because they were moving to Henderson, which in the end of, you know, scheme of things worked out just fine. But at the time, I wasn't so sure. part because I love my wife and I wanted to do this, but also, well, this will bust everyone's spirits. I proposed on February 17th of 2020, and then a week later, COVID happened and the world ended. So
great timing.
I've had some really well-intended bad luck Valentine's Day experiences, but I think 9 p.m. tonight Italian food is going to work just fine.
Yeah, maybe a warning from you for any big Valentine's Day plans in the future in case, you know, the world starts to crumble around us. You know,
I'm going to call the restaurant for tonight, just tell them to fireproof the kitchen. The worst is yet to come. You know, what are your thoughts on this, Justin? You see a lot of teams, the VGK does it too. It's fun, but you see a lot of pun-driven Valentine's Day graphics. Mm-hmm. Not my favorite anymore. It's been a while now. It's to me, if it's a really, really good pun, I'm there for it. But I kind of, across the league, I've gotten a little over it. Again, I'm a curmudgeon. Maybe I'm the only one who feels that.
I think when if you have a player with a unique name that fits into a fun one, then that kind of goes well. But, you know, of course, the cliche cards you always see with the same two or three sayings that you try to cram a name into that probably doesn't fit very well, I think. I'd agree with you on that one.
There are some names that fit, though. Historically, throughout hockey, I looked up a couple. It's almost like when you had me trying to guess, is it a name for Santa Claus or a former player? Some that work. Under our own roof for the Silver Knights, Brent Kissio, Kelly Kissio. That's pretty good. That's pretty low-hanging fruit.
Self-explanatory.
Okay. Brandon Hickey also works, but I don't know if that works on Valentine's Day.
A little more crude.
It's in the arena, but I don't know if it's the romantic side. Former Islander Jerry Hart.
Yeah.
That's a winner. You can use Jerry Hart. Assistant coach now of the Washington Capitals, former head coach of the Calgary Wranglers, Mitch Love. Mm-hmm. That's pretty, you know, you have to use these. Former goaltender Scott Darling.
You don't even have to shoehorn those into cards.
No.
They're just right there.
They just are. They are Valentine's approved.
They embody it.
Former NHLer Chris Valentine.
That's the easiest one I'd have to say right there.
Yeah. And then Dave and now younger Jimmy Snuggerud. That's a little bit of a shoehorn, but
you can make that work.
Yeah, it's cozy. Snuggeroods and Hickeys. That's the best Valentine's.
Gonna have the social media teams pounding the table for guys with good names for puns in February to their GMs coming up here.
We have a whole year. Exactly right. When the trade deadline comes, find us punnable names. Well, We had fun this afternoon. We hope you did, too. Happy Valentine's Day to everyone. If you didn't buy anything,
hurry.
You're out of time. You can download this podcast and send it along. The Silver Knights will be in action on Saturday evening. They take on the San Diego Gulls from Pechanga Arena. 7 o'clock puck drop. Pardon me, 6 o'clock puck drop, 5:30 pregame with Justin Russo. This has been HSK Today. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week.